Welcome to the November 10th service of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Blacksburg, Virginia. Today, our service is led by guest minister, Reverend Doug McCuster, and his sermon is titled, Meeting Yourself. The podcast begins with an introduction of Reverend Doug by Worship Associate Earl Irwin, and it ends with his benediction.
I'm Earl Irwin, your worship associate this morning. Our full-time minister, Rev. Pam Phillips, is serving as guest minister at UU Church of the Highlands near Abington this morning. As our own guest minister, we are fortunate to have Reverend Doug McCusker. Reverend Doug has been serving the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Fredericksburg as their settled minister since August 2015. He also serves as the facilitator for the humanist group at the Coffeewood Correctional Center in Mitchells, Virginia. Additionally, he's on the faculty at the Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago as a teaching assistant for U.S. History and Polity. He graduated with a Master of Divinity degree from Meadville Lombard in 2014, where he was a classmate of Rev. Pam's. Before entering seminary, he was active as a lay leader, youth advisor, and RE teacher at his home church in Accotink, Virginia, or in Accotink UU Church in Burke, Virginia. Rev. Doug retired in 2013 from service as a cartographic systems engineer with the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. He lives with his spouse, Marie, and their two cats in Fredericksburg, Virginia. They have an adult daughter, Bree, who lives in Massachusetts. And this morning, I learned from Rev. Doug that his daughter attended here when she was a student at RU, and she helped with our RE program. So some of you may remember her. Our reading this morning, Intentions and Trust by Amy Lloyd. Today, I want to greet joy without a trace of suspicion. I want to open my eyes to the light without a blink of dread. I want to look at my past without a whisper of shame. I want to look at my future without a hint of fear. Today, I want to dance without pausing to think. I want to belly laugh without caring who hears. I want to open my arms and twirl in the sun until I fall breathless, free to be myself, full of the joy that I open to allow, completely letting go without even a smudge of suspicion or a wink of hesitation. That's my intention. It's what I want.
Maybe some of you have read Eckhart Tolle or heard him on podcast, and I listen and read some of his books, so I don't know exactly which one this came from, but in one of his books he talked about the words nothi sutan. Nothi sutan. Those are the Greek words for know thyself. He says that these words were inscribed above the entrance to the temple of Apollo at Delphi, the site of the sacred oracle. In ancient Greece, people would visit the oracle, hoping to find out what destiny had in store for them or what course of action to take in a particular situation. It is likely that most visitors read these words, nothi sutan, as they entered the building, not realizing actually, that they that those words pointed to a deeper truth than anything that the oracle could possibly tell them. What those words imply is this. Before you ask any other question, first ask the most fundamental question of your life. Who am I? Knowing yourself goes far deeper than the adoption of a set of ideas or beliefs. Spiritual ideas and beliefs may at best be helpful pointers, but in themselves, they rarely have the power to dislodge the more firmly established core concepts of who you think you are, which are part of the conditioning of the human mind. Now, I've been to numerous meetings in which I've been asked to tell a little about yourself, right? And typically, I will give a chronological biography, sort of like what you heard at the beginning of the service. And it focuses on my accomplishments and my family situation. Perhaps I'll tell a story about something that happened to me. It's good to know about yourself, but it's not the same thing as knowing yourself. Knowing yourself deeply has nothing to do with what you've done or whatever ideas are floating around in your mind. I've been watching a Netflix series called The Crown. Has anybody else seen that? Okay. It's about the current British monarchy of the House of Windsor. The series starts with Queen Elizabeth, her ascension to the throne in 1952. And it's a historical drama, not a documentary. One of the episodes was about, I think it was in the second season, it was about the aging Winston Churchill, who had come back to power as the prime minister in his late 70s. He had several medical issues, and many people were questioning his ability to govern, but the stubborn national hero refused to step down. For his 80th birthday, both houses of Parliament commissioned an artist to paint his portrait. Now, Churchill was a painter himself, and he had lots of opinions about everything, including how he wanted to be portrayed. So as you can imagine, he was more comfortable being the artist rather than the subject. So there's this great scene when the artist, Graham Sutherland, commented about one of Churchill's paintings of the pond on his estate. The artist said that he was drawn to the dark, turbulent images that seemed to lay below the surface of the water. He felt as though Churchill was tapping into an inner turmoil that flowed beneath the surface of his own life. So he asked Winston if the painting was a cry of anguish. And the brash elder statesman brushed it off as perhaps a reflection of the viewer. "It was just a pond," he said. But then later, we learn that he painted that scene of the pond right after the death of one of his children, when his heart was weary and raw. While he thought he was just painting a pond, he was really painting his soul. He was so busy being famous and orchestrating his persona that he failed to recognize the real Winston Churchill, crying to be released from its bondage. And later, while sitting for the portrait, Churchill asked if he could see what Sutherland was drawing. But when he was refused, he said, "I know myself better than anyone. I can let you know if the neck is too thin or the arms are too long." And to this, I love this, to this Sutherland said, "I find that in general, people have very little understanding of themselves. One has to turn a blind eye so much to oneself to get through life." One has to turn a blind eye so much to oneself to get through life. The image that we see in the mirror is only the surface, and even that can be distorted by what we want to see. Even our memories and the stories we tell ourselves can be altered to fit a self that we want to present into the world. A lot of it is influenced by others and by our fears and our traumas. Knowing yourself is not so much about seeing yourself as much as it is being yourself. Knowing yourself is rooted in being instead of lost in the mind. Whenever an artist, a poet, or a musician sits down to create, they can't help being part of the creation. I know for me personally, when I start a sermon, I usually have no idea where it will end up. Or if I think I know, I am usually surprised. Things come up that need to be expressed, even things that I didn't even realize were there. I've heard it said that we give the sermon that we need to hear, and I believe it. I'm sure the artist paints the painting that they need to see. Each brushstroke, a reflection of their being. A musician can hit every note perfectly, but for a song to come alive, they need to be present in the melody, in the timing, the rests, and the feelings that they bring to the music, right? And so it is with our purpose in life. First, we must know who we are so that we can be present and authentic. Our purpose is not a thing that is out there that we must find, like looking for a buried treasure. It's not a singular path that we must hew out of soil with our sweat and toil. Rather, it is a state of being at the intersection of our passions and the needs of the world. Our passion is that which gives us inner joy and fills us with a sense of connection. When we are engaging in our passion, time stands still. Results are secondary. And we have this feeling of belonging right where we are. You know deep inside what your passion is, even if you can't articulate it in words. The connection I speak of is more intuitive, a merging of your energy with your environment, an alignment of your true self with the real world. And some call it being in the flow of the universe. Conversely, we also know when we are fighting the current and wasting our energy. When you find yourself in quicksand, the more you flail, the faster you sink. But when you relax and you go with the flow, you can actually stabilize your weight and float. Flailing draws us in, makes us small and dense. Floating spreads us out and allows space for possibilities to emerge. Pursuing your passions is a lot like floating. When I was at a crossroads in my previous career, I knew that I was flailing. Going to work was like having my spirit sucked out of me by an invisible siphon. I was hitting all the notes, playing the song as it was written, but I wasn't bringing my honest, authentic self to work. There was no passion and very little creativity. And I even felt like a phony sometimes, even though I was successful and getting high marks on my evaluations. And one day, I sat in silence, and I asked myself, when do I feel like my spirit is enlarged rather than diminished? When do I feel like I am fully present? And believe it or not, I thought about the times when I was engaged in, get this, church work or attending services. I was one of those super volunteers who would come home from work and spend several hours in front of a computer creating a lesson plan or poring over a budget or attending a committee meeting. Now, for some, that might feel like drudgery. But for me, it was when I was floating. And I don't believe it was the work itself. I think it was the connections that I felt whenever I was contributing to the community or doing something with my fellow congregants to make the world a better place. It was a state of being where my passion and my true self met the needs of the world. Now, ministry was the logical and an intuitive solution to my spiritual dilemma. But it wasn't until I started attending seminary that I realized that the work ahead of me was not learning new skills, but learning who I am. Nothi sutan. Now, I have several master's degrees, but the Master of Divinity was by far the hardest because it involved not just my mind, but my entire being. Don't get me wrong. We studied books. We learned about theology and pastoral counseling and church history. But it was the constant reflection of who I am, why I think and act that the way I do, and how I fit into the world that actually earned me the degree. And with every sermon that I write, or class that I teach, or social justice thing that I can do, I try to tap into that sense of connection, or else it isn't ministry. Now, I didn't start attending church hoping to be a minister one day. I came to church, a UU church, because I had a restless soul seeking connections and a spiritual purpose. I needed to feel like I fit into something greater than myself. And I found it, eventually, in ministry. But even that took some time for me to admit to myself, and even longer, to feel comfortable with what others were already seeing, kind of like Winston Churchill and his painting. Now, I also feel that sense of floating when I am hiking in the forest, visiting inmates at the prison, driving in the country with my spouse, eating good food, listening to jazz. And likewise, I've engaged in thousands of things, intellectually and emotionally, and some, for whatever reason, weren't good for me. They didn't fit. Some of them made me feel like I was sinking. And I'm sure you have too. We all do. This is part of being alive. We arrive at any purpose that fulfills us not by striving, but by constant trial and error. Only by probing, experimenting, and failing can we gauge the stirrings of our soul. Even in times of grief and sorrow, seeds are being sown, which someday may bear fruit in the unlikeliest places. But only only when we are rooted in being, instead of lost in our minds, can we truly sense the murmurs of our soul. These murmurs and sustained passions are collectively who we are. I believe that we are made of thousands of experiences, all seeds for the passions that stir our soul. Know thyself, and you will know a purpose. In the words of Khalil Gibran, say not, I have found the truth, but rather, I have found a truth. Say not, I have found the path of the soul. Say rather, I have met the soul walking upon my path. For the soul walks upon all paths. May it be so. Please join hands, shoulders, one way to connect in community as I read these closing benediction words. Our purpose is not a thing that is out there that we must find like looking for a buried treasure. It is not a singular path that we must hew out of the soil with our sweat and toil. Rather, it is a state of being at the intersection of our passion and the needs of the world. May you meet your soul walking upon your path. And when you do, know that it has been your companion all along, waiting for you to pay attention.